Welcome into State Your Line, a podcast for Kansas Indians by Kansas Indians. We are the Ritz Brothers. Today is February 25th. We are recording from the Plex Pod Studios in Westport.
More on that
in a bit. But I mean, today we have a Kansas City Chief on the podcast.
We've been How cool is that? For a while to have a Chief on the podcast, and this is like the era that I grew up in.
Yes.
Like this, the Mark Boerichter teams were the teams I played Madden the most with.
Why I think that everybody on that Chiefs team is so good.
Yeah.
Because we played so much Madden with
So much Madden. Like Madden 2002 to 2006
yeah.
was like
Priest Holmes
all the time.
Yeah.
That's Trent all
Green,
we played.
That team. Yeah. Yes. And Boerichter
on GameCube.
Too.
We were like the only kids on the block with the GameCube. Everyone was like, dude, check out my Xbox. We're like, oh, I got a stupid GameCube.
Yeah, I know. Well, but. That's why now it's hitting me why I thought the Chiefs defense was so good in that era, or I can't figure out why they weren't. It's because they were so good on Madden when I played with them.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, so that's very exciting. Like I said, we're coming from you from our Plex Pod studio now. So we'll be recording from Plex Pod here in the Westport Commons. Pretty sweet setup.
Yeah. We are like a, like kind of looking like a real podcast now.
And we'll put a video out, but there's new microphones.
We got new mics set up. We've got our own space now. So before we were recording in my loft with high ceilings and
As an audio engineer, that's a terrible place to record.
Yeah, as an audio engineer. But now, we've got private recording rooms at the Plex Pod Westport Commons here. And these are incredible. I mean, like, it feels like we have our own home studio. So shout out to PlexPod for help hooking it up. Shout out to Julie for hooking it up. And I think we'll be taken serious now.
Yes,
I think, the content that we'll be continuing to cover is very, very serious.
Yes, exactly. We'll get into more of that serious content later. We'll get into more Chiefs talk later because, I mean, we got to sit down with Mark freaking Boerichter, which was awesome. But the Royals are in spring training.
The Royals.
And Steve Fisiak is in spring training form?
No. Steve Fisiak is in midseason form. Fisiak is just firing on all cylinders. He doesn't even need a preseason.
No,
because,
he does not.
Not that anyone was really watching, but someone or enough people on Twitter were watching the game or listening to it. And Fisiak called Salvi Eric Hosmer for a whole at-bat.
So, that's awesome.
Fisiak's in midseason form, just doesn't know who's playing.
That is getting, a very midseason form thing of his.
Just saying the wrong words at the wrong time and just calling people by the wrong name and just emphasizing the wrong word. Like, that's Fisiak's. Fisiak's in prime form. If he's just emphasizing random words, that it makes no sense.
Yeah. Another also midseason form thing he does is just he'll talk through a hole at bat and then be like, and there's two outs and a runner on second. And you're like, what? There was no outs and nobody on.
Yeah.
You told a story and now there's two outs and a runner on second.
Yeah. He's incredibly bad at his job and he's been employed by one of 32.
I'll send in the Royals my tape of me calling high school football.
There's 32 people who have his job. And he's one of them.
Yeah.
And he's that bad. He called Bubba Starling Bubble Starling for a good portion of today's game as well. So I think Bubble Starling is a solid nickname. So I say we just roll with that.
Bubble.
Make
Bubble
it easy Starling. On. I mean, he kind of has always been a player on the bubble.
Yes.
You know, is he going to be in the majors this year?
Is he going to spend his eighth year in the minor leagues?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's lean into that.
Bubble Starling.
Bubble Starling. Mm-hmm. I'm down for that.
All right, yeah, and that's really it for the Royals.
Yeah.
I mean, they got to play Eric Hosmer today. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, I saw some videos on Instagram about it.
So that's it for Royals. Fisiak, not in spring training form. He's in mid-season form.
Exactly.
Calling players by the wrong name.
Mm-hmm.
Very on brand for Fisiak.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's try something we've done before.
No, I don't think we have. We've talked about doing it.
We've talked about what we learn about Kansas City. We've done a few segments on it.
All right.
But we're going to have to get more into it, lean into it, as the Chiefs were weaning off of them.
So we did find a really cool story and learn something new about Kansas City this week.
Yeah. So as we're in this lull, yeah, we want to find random, it can be stupid, funny facts. It can be mm-hmm. really, I'm into history. So like it can be about the history of Kansas City. It can be about, you know,
that
something that we don't
finally coming into use for you.
Yeah. Thank you. It can be something random. So if you find something really interesting about Kansas City that you've never heard before, we'd love to talk about it. So send us those ideas. But this week, I heard a story on KCUR that was really interesting. So I read the article, did a little bit more digging, and it's fascinating. So I'll recap the story for you. But essentially, there is a graveyard, an Indian graveyard in downtown Kansas City, Kansas, mm-hmm. like right on Minnesota Avenue, like right in downtown KCK. And that, Indian graveyard has an incredible history. So in that Indian graveyard are members of the Wyandot tribe. Wyandot County. Right? Mm-hmm. So the Wyandot tribe started in Canada, actually. Then white settlers moved in. They were forced down to the Detroit area, the Detroit Bay area, mm-hmm. a little bit. And then Andrew Jackson and his awesomeness.
Really good guy. Yeah.
Really great guy. put into effect the Indian Removal Act.
Okay.
It's very, you know, in 1830, that's a very normal act to put into place. Yeah. Indian Removal Act.
Basically sending all the tribes south or to Indiana or to Oklahoma.
Yeah, south, anywhere south, basically, mm-hmm. and to Oklahoma mostly. So the Wyandot Indians go down the Mississippi River, run into the Missouri River, hit the Kansas River, and they are like, all right, this is like 1830 time. Mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, this seems like a pretty good place. The intersection of the Missouri River and the Kansas River, aka Kansas City.
Yeah.
So they settle there in Wyandot County in that KCK area. And
the Kaw Valley.
The Kaw Valley, yes. Mm-hmm. Good job.
So Shout out Johnny Kaws.
250 Bud Lights all day, every day.
Hey, no free ads.
Yeah, and so they settle there. And on their journey from Detroit area to Kansas City, a lot of people die.
Mm-hmm.
About 100 people die from the measles. So as soon as they arrive in Kansas City, they bury all, they need a place to bury all these people.
Yeah, before they built a city, they needed to build a graveyard.
Yeah, so they build this graveyard around 1930. Fast forward 25 years. It's 1855. More white people are saying, hey, we want this area. So in 1855, the government says, all right, let's do another treaty. And why don't the Wyandot tribe move all the way to Oklahoma? By this time, the Wyandot tribe, like about half didn't want to move, half did. Mm-hmm. So half stayed in Wyandot, in that region, downtown KCK, what is now downtown KCK. So they're there. Some of those people that stayed was a family called the Connolly family. So by this time, the Indian Native Americans and some of the white settlers and others had begun forming families together. So there's this family there called the Connollys.
I think it was a British dad.
Yeah, British farmer and a Native American mom.
Mm-hmm.
One of those Connolly sisters, there's three sisters, is Lyda Connolly.
Badass chick.
Yes. So Lyda Connolly is born in around 1865, I think, something like that. Mm-hmm. Both of her parents have died, and it's her and her two other sisters, the three of them, living in poverty, basically have nothing. And Lyda decides, so at this point, Kansas City is starting to form. So yes, now
grow,
we're
develop.
Yeah, fast forwarding mm-hmm. to about
KCK is becoming some prime real estate.
1880 mm-hmm. area. KCK is becoming prime real estate. So they, and the cemetery is right in the middle of downtown. So they say, we want this cemetery to build, you know, build our city on. Lyda says, no, not having that. So she, having grown up with no parents in extreme poverty,
paddle boating across the river to go to college,
goes to Kansas City Law School, gets her law degree, passes the bar.
Before women can even vote,
she's passing the bar and she says, all right, I'm going to fight this and not let anyone take this cemetery. At the same time, the tribe that had left for Oklahoma, they are like, yeah, we're the official tribe. Mm-hmm. Like the official Wyandotte tribe moved to Oklahoma, according to the government. So yeah, we'll sell that land in KCK because it'll make us a lot of money. And we're down here in Oklahoma. Yeah. We don't care. And so she's actually fighting against her own tribe that had moved on to Oklahoma and the federal and the government. And so she's got her law degree. She takes this whole thing to court.
Mm-hmm.
While she's fighting in court, her and her two sisters also build a fort.
Yep.
They padlock the cemetery,
mm-hmm.
build a fort.
Get some guns,
and literally just stake out the cemetery. And if anyone wants to come in there, they're going to literally go to war against them.
Yep.
And so they're staking out there. Ida loses the court case. She appeals, goes before the Supreme Court. She is becomes the first woman to ever try a case in front of the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, she loses that, but because, you know, she's the first woman to try a case in front of the Supreme Court, she's built a fort and literally fighting people off with guns.
The media is all over this.
Yeah, so
the
media has gotten attention of it. It gets the attention of some local senators, and they come. There's a senator, I can't remember his name, who's part Caw, who comes to their aid.
It was Johnny Caw.
Yeah, it was the Johnny Caw. And she they protect the cemetery. So to this day, you can look it up. It's called Huron Indian Cemetery. It's in downtown KCK. You can Google it. And it is there because Lida, who was the first woman to try a case in front of the Supreme Court, decided, I'm getting my law degree on my own, and I'm going to fight this. So I had no clue about any of that. Mm-hmm. That was 100% everything about that story was completely new to me, and I found it fascinating.
Yeah, a really cool just history about Kansas City.
And, yeah.
I mean, it combines a lot of different aspects of what was going on at the time, too. So a really cool story.
Yeah.
Thanks. That's what we learned this week.
That's what we learned this
Kansas
week.
City.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for that, Ritzer. Appreciate it. All right. Let's jump into openings and closings. What do we got opening this week?
So opening this week is Boulevard is once again jumping.
Yeah.
Pouncing.
Uh-huh.
In 2015. Crown Town Ale.
Yes.
Sold a billion of them, probably. Mm-hmm. 2020, Worth the Wait Imperial Red.
Yes.
Boulevard Beer. So they're releasing a commemorative
Imperial Red Ale.
Imperial Red Ale. That's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
And being very creative about the branding.
Yes.
And without, I don't think they had to pay the Chiefs a dime for this.
I don't think they did either.
Because it's just called Worth the Wait. Mm-hmm. That's the name of the beer. It doesn't say Chiefs anywhere. It doesn't say NFL anywhere. It doesn't say Super Bowl anywhere. And it has
just
a football
is red
on
and yellow
it.
And football.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's called an Imperial Red, which is a type of beer.
Yep.
Cashing in.
Yes. Very smart. I don't like red ales. So I don't know if I'll drink one.
Mm.
But I'll look at it. I'll look at it.
Are you going to buy one?
No.
Okay.
I'll just look at it.
I'll probably try to buy one.
I would try one. I might try one, but probably not because I'm not really that into the red ale. All right. Also opening this week, it's Waldo week.
What's opening this week in Waldo?
It's Waldo week. That's the thing. The fifth annual Waldo week. I feel like they're not promoting it very well. I'd never heard of this.
Poorly. Very
poorly. Because this is only the second time I've lived in Waldo for Waldo week. I missed it last year.
Just missed it?
Missed it. But it's like 25% off everything for those participating. So dinners. I saw Betty Ray's. You buy a $25 gift card, you get a free scoop of ice cream.
Count it.
So Waldo
scoop
week.
Of ice cream at Betty
and
Ray's.
It ends on the 27th, so get there fast. It was open the 21st, so basically last weekend to this Thursday.
Hmm.
Yeah. So only one weekend. That's all you get.
Why would Waldo they? Week. That'll make no much sense. That's like classic Waldo. It's like, hey, like this is our best effort. This is what we got.
I love it.
Put it
love
out
it.
There.
Perfect.
People,
love that.
If people participate,
great.
Great. If not, Whatever.
Yeah. We don't really want too many people from other places coming here anyway. So,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We just want to make sure. Just give our locals a little bit. We'll let them know about it.
Yeah.
We'll broadcast it just a little. Just
maybe
enough.
A little bit, but just enough. But yeah, let's not try too hard.
Yeah.
With this whole thing. That let's just do one
week.
We
don't even want anyone from the plaza coming up to Waldo.
A Friday to a Thursday, that's a week. Call it good.
Yeah. It's exactly a week. Very logical.
All right, Waldo week.
Yep. All right, and it'll close this week, too. So that's an opening and closing.
And closing. Love it. What else is closing? So there's another spot closing. It's called Our Daily Nada.
Nada.
I had never heard of it. It's a bookstore and library slash bar. So similar to Afterward Tavern and Shelves, which I've talked about on here, which is in the Crossroads. But Our Daily Nada was in the River Market. It's closing. It was open at some point.
It's not.
It was a bar and library.
Okay.
In bookstore.
Rest in peace, Nada.
Sorry, Nada.
Sorry, Nada. All right. So that is our openings and closings this week. And like we alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, we have Mark Boerichter joining us this week. Former Kansas City Chief from 2003 to 2002 to 2005 or 2006.
Yeah.
Yeah. So really fun interview with Mark. I just forget how, like, ex-athletes, they just have a million stories to tell, and they're awesome. And so you should listen to this. All right, today we are joined by a special guest, former Kansas City Chief Mark Boerichter. Mark, I guess where I want to start, I guess we've been talking about the parade since it happened. You actually got to be there and broadcast the parade for Spectrum Sports. What was your vantage point at the parade? Like, where were you sitting at?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because we were originally supposed to be on site down at the parade. And then we actually broadcast from the studio instead of actually being down.
Boo!
Outside. I know. It was, I was really pumped.
Was that like a budget cut or something?
I don't know. It was, again, above my pay grade in terms of that decision making process of it. But yeah, I went from earlier in the week to, you know, with my two kids wanting to go down to the parade because we were down for the Royals one, of course, and stuff and all the chaos and humanity. And I think this city learned a lot from that parade, just by the way, on that piece. But we were originally supposed to be like down around 17th and Grand. And so it went from my kids and I getting ready to go down because my wife was like, I'm not going down in that sea of humanity again. I'll just watch it on TV and having a really good spot to – okay, they're going to stay, I think, at home and watch it on TV and watch me just do it. And so we did it from the studio. It was interesting because, you know, I got approached about doing it. And I was like, well, yeah, of course I want to do this. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking back to, you know, like when I was a kid, I'm like, how do I actually critique what's going on during this parade?
It's like announcing,
literally my question. Is this like the Tournament of Roses parade? Like, or all like the all the stuff
announcing
going?
The royal wedding or something?
Yeah, yes.
Like that.
It was like, so we were having this discussion, and this is really funny because my daughter's 15, and we're sitting having this discussion about, well, what are you going to talk about during this parade? And I go, well, we're going to show some interviews from the Super Bowl and different things that are going on too throughout the course of this two-hour broadcast. Mm-hmm. And my daughter's like, I could do that, you know? And I'm like, well, what do you mean you could, you know, narrate the parade? And of course, she goes into all the social media stuff about, you know, that's Patrick Mahomes and his girlfriend Brittany, and this is Travis Kelce, and this is his girlfriend. Like, she goes through all that stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, man, I should probably just bring her into the studio and have her narrate this whole thing.
Hold up, along like, flashcards, like college football.
Exactly.
Like
she
that's
was,
Brittany.
She was all in the loop on all that stuff. But it was fun. I think, you know, we've obviously waited 50 years for the Chiefs just to get back to the Super Bowl and then to have just a great football game. And I know we're selfish because the Chiefs won, but it was a great game.
It was,
in
yeah.
itself. And then to be a part of that, I think, as a former player, just so happy for the Hunt family. You know, I was in tears after the AFC Championship game just because the Lamar Hunt Trophy was back in Kansas City and what that meant. And then to go win the World Championship. So I could not pass up the opportunity to be able to broadcast the World Championship Parade.
So you may not have had a great vantage point there, but you got to go onto the field after the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
What was that like entire scene like?
Well, it was crazy because – and I will give the Chiefs organization props because all of us alumni players and Chiefs ambassadors and stuff. They invited us down on the field.
Record holders.
Yeah, to celebrate with the team. And I happened to be at the game with my kids, and I was like, okay, I can go down the field, but am I going to leave them up here? And my daughter was like, you got to go down there. You got to go down there. But you got to take pictures, because I'm really bad about taking pictures. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go down there. So I was down there for about 20 minutes, and just being able to see guys like Dustin Colquitt, who's the last remaining Chief from my time playing, which, you know, he's been around forever now, too.
No kidding.
That's, I didn't think about that. You guys
overlapped. He's the last remaining guy from my time. But seeing the coaches, just seeing all the former players, seeing all the staff, just so proud about that moment. And, you know, we came so close a year ago to that piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this year, and I'm standing there talking to people, and all of a sudden I look down, and there's confetti still flying, and I'm looking down, I'm standing on confetti, and I just reached down and started stuffing my pockets full of confetti, because I was like, we don't know what's going to happen in the Super Bowl. We just won the AFC Championship game, and I want some of this, you know, for my kids to have at home, and for me, too. So it's sitting in a big vase. I got a lot of confetti that I didn't realize I had stuffed
in
my pocket.
You can sell it on eBay,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, like, I probably could. Yeah.
I've seen people, like, trading it and swapping it on eBay.
I probably could, but it's going to stay right where it's at. But it was surreal, you know, and mm-hmm. I think the biggest part about that, like, I saw Dante Hall down on the field.
Who you played with.
Who I played with, and he came up and, like, jumped on me. I think we all took pride in that win. You know, I think there's a big piece a lot of times where – you know, as former players, even as fans, it's the we mentality. Hey, we won. We did this, you know, type of thing.
I called myself a world champion.
Yes, and rightfully
so. Season ticket holders, come on.
Go ahead, you know, embrace it. But I think that moment right there was like the culmination of everything, and I think everybody being so happy for the Hunt family. Because when you go back and look at, you know, him starting the AFL and then being instrumental in creating the Super Bowl and Norma Hunt naming it the Super Bowl and everything else that goes along with that, I think that's just what made it more special as opposed to if it was just some other organization.
Yeah,
for sure.
And you actually, you know, you played for Lamar.
Right.
And I saw an interview that you did where, you know, it sounded like he took interest in you and the players as people first and then kind of what they could do on the field.
Absolutely. I think, you know, he was a special human, and I'll probably get choked up as I tell the story again, but in my living room sits the printing plate from the New York Times sports page the Monday after my NFL record and Chiefs record. And I remember getting called in to his office. His assistant secretary called me in the offseason, like early in the offseason, and I'm, you know, just completed my rookie year. I don't get in trouble, so I'm like, what is this about? That Lamar wants to see me. So I came in and we talked about family stuff and just, you know, kind of BS back and forth for 20 minutes. And he's like, I want you to have something. And he gave it to me. And I was like, this is.
It was the New York Times,
it's,
right?
Yeah, it's the printing plate from the New York Times back when, you know, they still print newspapers. Yeah, but, yeah. You know, from that side of things. And the fact that he went out of his way to go get it.
Yeah.
I think is the part to me that was so special because. I mean, I'm sure he's Lamar Hunt, and he can make a couple phone calls, and it can happen. But the fact that he thought about that on a personal level, and at the time, it probably didn't mean as much to me. I was like, wow, this is great. But now I sit back and look at it, and it just goes to show you, I think, what type of person he was and how invested he was in the players as people and the culture created around that. And, you know, I played for Dick Vermeil here, who was notorious for crying at the drop of a hat and everything else. But he truly cares about his players as well, right? There was that whole entire culture, that family side of things that you just don't see all the time in professional sports. Mm-hmm. It does happen, and there are owners that are that engaged, but Lamar genuinely cared about you as a person first and then as a player second on things, and I think that's what makes it so special now that I look back at it. And I got home after the AFC Championship game. We were just talking about all the confetti and stuff, but I just sat there and stared at that, and I just started bawling my eyes out because I was like, I was so happy for this family and the organization and everything, and all those emotions start coming and rushing back into you.
Do you think that there was ever – so I remember, you know, Lamar passed, Clark took over the team. I feel like remembering – I think of Clark so fondly now because of how good of an owner he is now. I feel like there's a period of time where I used to think he kind of lives in Dallas. Like, does he care about the team? Do you ever feel like there was that kind of lull in the organization of, like – maybe just kind of an absentee owner at all?
I don't know. I think there was a transition that needed to happen, right? And I think, you know, Clark was chosen to run the franchise. And I think that, you know, he was ready to, but I think there was a learning curve with that. I mean, I'm not speaking ill of Clark when I say that he's not the most charismatic and
yeah, he wore earplugs down on the field.
Yeah, he's not. I guess where I'm going with this is, you know, this is a bad example, but Jerry Jones is the other extreme of it, right? In terms of that. And Clark's thing is, you know, he's fine in a public setting and fine being in front of everybody, but I think that was an adjustment for him because, you know, it's not the most comfortable thing for him to do, personality-wise. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say that. And I think there was just a time in there where he had to learn, okay, I'm the face of this, and there are times when things get rough that I'm going to have to come out, you know, and talk when maybe I don't want to, or none of us would want to in some cases, right? And, you know, Hearn became the head coach, and that went well for a little bit, and this was an aging roster. It was an aging roster when I was on it, and there had to be some turnover there. And then, you know, they went out and got Scott Pioli, who at the time was – you know, one of the top personnel guys out there, and I thought it was going to go. Well, yeah, everybody liked it higher. And, you know, to Scott's credit, and I know Scott, there would have been a lot of changes that he would have made. And he's come out and said that after about his time here in Kansas City. And it just, you know, it went really south real fast. But, you know, when that whole – when all that changed over and they went out and identified Andy Reid – and got it. It changed the culture back to what it needed to be here for sure.
So I guess staying. I don't know if you have, do you have another question about that. Because
no, because I want to talk about the 02, 03, 04 Chiefs.
I have a lot of those. Like some of my favorite. Okay, but I do have another like current event question. Have you seen Dez Bryant running routes on Twitter today?
Yeah, I did see that.
Do you think you're faster than him? He looked pretty slow.
I could still, yeah, yes.
Because I think
he looks slowest.
I think Patrick Mahomes could make you look that good.
Everybody's making a lot out of it. Like, oh, he's working out. I'm like, the thing that people need to realize is guys go work out in places in the offseason all the time where there's people around. Like, there's other players. That's why you see guys swapping jerseys and different things now after games, because not that everybody knows everybody, but we live in a time now where guys, especially during this time when they're not at the facility working out in the offseason program, they're out working and working out, and they're going to spots where – they know that trainers know how to train them as professional athletes. So it just sort of happens that they're all, you know, together.
Did you have any sweet workouts like that with like a different quarterback?
No, not during my time. Because like I stayed.
Dante Culpepper just
I stayed in Kansas City pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
But then that's kind of been more of a fad now. I think it's a lot of the guys that, you know, I really never left Kansas City to go work out anywhere. I'm from Nebraska originally.
Did you grow up a Chiefs fan?
I don't want to say this. I grew up really a Broncos fan for a while.
Disgusting.
And part of the reason of that is –
we got our salacious bit of information there.
Part of the reason of that was we lived in Colorado for a while until I was in the fourth grade. So in the late 80s, mid-80s, when John Elway had the drive against Cleveland, they had the three amigos with Ricky Nateel, Vance Johnson, and Mark Jackson, all those guys.
Yeah.
You know, we followed the Broncos. And then we moved to Nebraska – when I was in fourth grade and still followed the Broncos, but you always got, you know, regionally, you always got the Chiefs game first, of course, and then the Broncos game second, you know, if, especially if Denver's playing at home. So I got to watch a lot of Chiefs games with Christian Okoye, you know, up in the mid 90s and everything else. But yeah, I mean, I didn't necessarily have an allegiance to the Broncos necessarily, but I definitely grew up originally as a kid really following the Broncos.
Well, that's interesting then, because I was reading about how, I mean, after your CFL, you know, breakout, you're a superstar in Canada, right? You had, I thought, offers from Broncos, Colts, and Chiefs. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Okay. And the Falcons, I had offers from about five or six teams. So you get all those. Those were really – the Colts, Chiefs, Broncos, and Falcons were – really the four teams that I was seriously considering. I'm not going to lie, it was about the money at that point.
It should be.
I had an offer to go to the Patriots, an offer to go to the Packers. And coming out, I just wanted to get in the best situation possible. Now, looking back on it, you go, how did you turn down going to Indianapolis and catch, you know, passes from Peyton Manning?
Right.
Because I actually took less money to come to Kansas City than I would have in Indy. But I looked at the situation with all the receivers and – everybody else personnel wise and said, where can I get on the field the fastest? Because Indianapolis was very honest with me. They had Jerome Payton at the time was going to be a free agent. but they made no bones about it. They wanted to re-sign him. And, you know, coming out of the CFL, there was a window of time in your option year that you can sign. So I didn't get to wait until March necessarily to sign. You had to sign within 30 days. So free agency was coming a month down the road. And I looked at Kansas City with a good quarterback in Trent Green. Obviously a great tight end in Tony Gonzalez. And Eddie Kennison had only been here for like four games the year before at the end of the 01 season. Snoop Minnis was here.
We saw him in the parking lot.
Larry Parker. I saw him too. Larry Parker was here. There just wasn't – Dante was not Dante Hall at that point, right?
No, he was
just
a running back. He was
converted running back who just went over and played in NFL Europe. So I looked at it and said, where's the opportunity for me, you know, to get on the field best? And I thought it was here in Kansas City, and I'm not upset with my decision. I mean, there's not a day that goes by I don't think about what happened, what would happen if I went to Indy. But, yeah, it came down to that, and it came down to where I felt most comfortable when I was here.
I thought there should be, like, a mushy answer. Like, Bill Snyder has the, you know, I stayed in, came here for the people, stayed for the people.
That's right.
Bo Richter came for the money, stayed for the money.
That's the right way to do
That's right.
So talking about that rookie season of yours, the rookie NFL season, 20 catches, 8 touchdowns.
Yeah.
What the hell? Were you just like a ball magnet, like in the red zone, or?
Well,
or
I think
did you and Trent have just a really good connection once you got?
No,
down there?
I'll tell you what the best thing for me was when I got here is through the offseason program and all the OTAs and mini camps and stuff. Tony Gonzalez was holding out that year. People probably don't remember this on a contract dispute, and it wasn't much of a holdout, but he was holding out. So he wasn't around during all those off-season program and practices that, you know, in air quotes are you know, voluntary, even though everybody wants you here, right? And so I got thrust into the offense because I got to run a lot of his routes from the slot on things and learning the entire offense. And so I got a lot of reps that year in OTAs and minicamp and everything where I got to learn the entire offense. I ran a lot of his routes and figured all that piece out. And so I knew that I was going to have a really good opportunity to play. And then, like, the second day of training camp comes, and I feel like I pulled an abdominal muscle in camp, and it turns out I had appendicitis. So I missed 2 weeks. I missed 3 preseason games my rookie year. Because I had to get my appendix out in Minneapolis, Minnesota, because we were, you know, in River Falls at the time, right?
We were up there. What year were we up there?
We went when Gunther was still coach and Gerbach.
That's right.
Good old Elvis.
But sexiest man alive. Elvis.
Sexiest athlete.
So I got off to a slow start that year because I had to get worked back into the offense and played a lot of special teams. And I was active every week and playing special teams. And then about the fourth or fifth game, I made a catch against Jacksonville late in the game over top of a guy for about 45 yards and started earning some more trust of the coaches to get on the field. And then went out to San Diego and played and had my first 2 touchdowns and like 3 or 4 catches and had a big game. And then it just snowballed from there. And it just got to the point where – you know, I've always, my entire career, I've always caught touchdowns and I've been a big play guy from high school on. And, you know, it's just something that came natural to me.
It's innate.
It's just something that came natural to me. And then the other piece that, you know, that helped me is that Tony Gonzalez a lot of times was on the other side of the field. Okay. So even in San Diego, my first touchdown, they're rolling coverage his direction. So I'm one-on-one and all I have to do is beat that guy. I mean, it made it a lot easier for me based on my ability to beat some of those guys on mismatches.
And you were, you know, one of the bigger wide receivers too. So
absolutely.
So playing like in practice, you know, running Tony Gonzalez's routes, did you see yourself like, I can back up Eddie Kennison, I can back up Tony Gonzalez, I can kind of do anything on offense that they ask?
Yeah, because this was one of the most frustrating parts for me, I think, as a player. And I didn't handle this all that well in 2003 and 2004, 2005, I'll tell you.
24 years old.
But I'll tell you, like, because I came out and, you know, we'd signed Johnny Morton in 2002 also, and I outproduced him. And so I made a goal, I'm going to start in 2003. And came out, you know, and led the team, I think, in the preseason and receiving and was ready to start, and I didn't get to start. And I think the main reason for that is, to your point of, I knew the entire offense. I was more valuable as the top backup guy in there because if somebody got hurt, I did start games when, you know, somebody was hurt or somebody was out because they could plug me wherever they needed to. So it's an advantage and a disadvantage, I think, when I look back on it now, too.
That makes sense, yeah.
But, yeah, I was extremely blessed with that whole piece that, you know, with Tony there and being able to integrate myself in the entire offense, that if something did happen, I certainly wasn't going to play at the level that he was playing at. But, you know, there's a lot less drop-off there, I think, than
yeah, so
other guys in for sure.
We're talking about touchdown passes, catches, rookie year. Got to talk about the 99-yard.
Absolutely.
What was – I want to know the play call on that. Do you remember the play call? It was like a play action to Priest Holmes.
It was jet protection. I think it was 822 special. So,
so 822, is that is that the route tree?
That's the route tree, yeah. So okay. We played – our offense was not the West Coast style of offense. It was a Don Coryell style of offense. Now everything's been bastardized at this point with all this stuff. And all the concepts are the same in every offense, but how we called it. So I'm the only receiver split out. And I've got the eight route, which is the post. And really, I'm clearing out. I mean, we're looking to take a shot potentially, but we have a shallow cross coming underneath, and then Gonzalez is like on a deeper cross. And those are the twos, the crossy routes on it. And really, at the time, we're trying to get the ball really to open 88 up. So I'm taking the top off the coverage on it. I got to give Omar Easy credit, our fullback at the time, who – full started.
That name is such a blast. Yeah.
Who full started, by the way, to back us up a yard half the distance.
Oh, nice.
To make it 99.
Thank you, Omar.
You know, if it was 98, I'd still the Chiefs record, just not an NFL record on it. Yeah, and I beat the safety over the top, and Trent read it and threw it to me, and the rest, you know, history. It's one of those things that, you know, afterwards, I'm winded, of course, and everybody's going nuts because it was such a big play. And you're sitting there, and then all of a sudden you hear, you know, that's a Kansas City Chiefs and NFL record. And I had to go back out and cover the kickoff, I think, right afterwards, you know. So you don't really think about it and the scope of it until after it's all over, until it sets in. And, you know, now it's still the one thing I hang my hat on here, and it's the one thing that everybody remembers, of course, about me, which is great. I don't have any issues with that. I'll be happy because, you know, we joke all the time that – you know, I'm in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Like, I don't have a bust. I will never have a bust in Canton, right? But my name is listed there under a record holder. I'm tied with several other guys. But the beauty of it is it'll never be broken unless they, you know,
do something,
expand the field.
Did you see anything in the defense that made you think, like, okay, this could bust open, like, right when you lined up? Or it was just, like, a couple of mistakes where they bit on Priest? Or
I think at the time, you know, I'm reading the coverage, but my job is to run the post as hard as I can, and it's to influence the safety, so
deceptive speed, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. Quicker than fast, you know, good route runner,
real coach's kid,
all that piece. Yeah, exactly. And I just, you know, I just ran as hard as I could to take the top off the coverage and just kept going and got behind the safety because I think Rodney Harrison bit up on Tony, and that's why Trent couldn't throw it there, and he saw it and took a shot. So, yeah, and the rest is history.
So what's more fun, like that play or like an open field tackle on kickoff coverage?
Ooh,
like at Arrowhead? Because I imagine like a kickoff, being on the kickoff coverage at Arrowhead has to be like a drug no one's ever experienced.
Yeah,
like start me up playing, crowd going crazy.
You just can't explain the feeling, you know, especially after a touchdown or different things when Arrowhead is really rocking out there.
I've got my shirt off.
Yeah, you guys are up in the stands going nuts. I mean,
Raytona Beach, as we call it.
You can't hear anybody next to you, you know, even on the sideline, because it's just so loud. There's nothing like that feeling on that piece. But, no, I think scoring a touchdown is always better from an offensive guy. I'll say that. But I had several big hits on punt team and everything else, too, that are fun. But I think to hear Arrowhead erupt – and one of the loudest times I ever heard Arrowhead erupt was in the Broncos game in 2003 when we were in the reverse on the opening kickoff. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it was when Dante had been in his streak of, like, three or four straight games.
He was an MVP candidate. Like, I remember, like, we had a Monday Night Football game or something early on. They were, like, MVP candidates of the season so far. It was, like, Dante Hall, Priest Holmes.
We worked on this reverse on the kickoff because I was on the front line, and we worked on it for, like, 2 weeks. And we're like, we're never going to call this thing, right? So the night before, we're like, hey, if we win the toss, this is the time you couldn't defer. You either won the toss and we're getting the ball, right, in the NFL or kicking off. And so we win the toss. Denver is like 5 – I can't remember if we were both 4-0 or 5-0 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're running we get there and Vermeil's on the sideline. Frank Gaines Jr. is our special teams coach. He's like, we're going to run it. And Vermeil's like, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. So we turn around and walk away in the huddle, and Frank just turns around and basically like, F it, we're running this thing right now. I remember it happening, it broke, and I broke it for like 45 or 50 yards. I think I ended up getting tackled by the kicker because it squeezed in. But
we'll keep that
off. It wasn't, well, no, it's fine. It wasn't in an open field because the hole kind of closed. But I just remember thinking to myself, like, man, what happened? What would happen if I had taken that back for a touchdown? Like, because the place was already
amped
up for this game because it's the Broncos and everything else. And I remember it being so loud right after that happened.
Your beloved Broncos.
My beloved Broncos. Taking them down.
You had a sweet block in that game, too, on the 93-yard punt return. I was watching some films today.
Yeah, that's right. That was the game of the infamous punt return.
And Eric Warfield shoving that guy right in the back.
It's a judgment call. It's a complete judgment call on that piece. It is a
judgment call. I think he just fell over.
I distinctly remember because we actually had a punt block on that time, and I was coming off the edge. My job is to contain the edge, and I come around and kick it, and Dante fields it at like the 5, and I remember
inside the 5,
and I remember thinking, what is he doing, right? And so then from my vantage point, I'm looking at like from 30, 40 yards away, and you just see him jitterbugging left and right, and then all of a sudden he pops out, and it's like, okay, now we got to find somebody to block, and he took it back. That's probably one of the moments that was the loudest I've ever heard Arrowhead after that whole deal.
Yeah. So that 2002 team, 2003 team, I mean, it had some absolute Chiefs legends on it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Tony Gonzalez, Eddie Kinnison, Priest Holmes, Morton Anderson, Dante Hall, like the entire O-line. I don't know if I have a question, but just like, what was it like playing with those guys? I mean, they're incredible.
Here's the thing. I pinch myself all the time because I played with four Pro Football Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
You just listed several of them there, right? Uh-huh. It was Willie Rofe, Will Shields.
Brian Waters
in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, he's not?
Tony G is, though.
But Tony is. And then Morton got in a year or two ago, right? And so I sit there and pinch myself and go, man, how good was that roster, right? Because Brian Waters is up in the Chiefs Hall of Fame, right? Tony Richardson is. He was on that team. You know, Will is, obviously.
Priest
is up there. But the quality of guys that I played with from an ability standpoint was unbelievable. I sit back now and look at it and go like, man, there was four Hall of Famers on that team.
Yeah, I think Will Shields has like three holding penalties in his entire career or something like
that. It's absolutely absurd the talent that was on that team overall. Now, you know, Morton was toward the end of his career.
I think he was 42.
Willie Rofe was 43. Yeah, we used to joke that he's going to collect his pension and still be kicking at the same time. Which, by the way, I got to tell this story about Morton. So the first experience I had with Morton when we signed him in 2002 was during our offseason program. And I was like, wow, this is Morton Anderson. I thought the same thing with Willie Rofe, too, right? And you watch Willie walk, and you're like, how does this guy play left tackle in the National Football League? Because, you know. And there were times where he was a team captain and Vermeil didn't let him go out to the coin toss just because he walked so bad. Like, you're like, okay, we don't want to do this. But Morton was so good and so accurate. So he'd go, remember in training camp, it may have been 2002, had to have been, and he's out there warming up before specialist period. And he's like, hey, Bo, which upright? And he's like 30 yards away with a little, you know, holder thing that's holding. Well, I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, what's your upright, left or right? I'm like, I don't know, left. Pings it right off the upright. So then it became a little game. I'm like, okay, right, do the right one. Pinged it. And he hit it like four straight times.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's why he's Morton Anderson. And, you know, he didn't have the leg strength then, but he was so accurate. It was unbelievable. But it's like almost the old plastic face mask he still had at the time.
Yeah, he had the two-bar.
It wasn't the single bar. Yeah, it wasn't the single bar, but it was the old two-bar one.
But I think there could be a fifth Hall of Famer on the team. I feel like Priest Holmes should be a Hall of Famer. And we always compare his numbers to Terrell Davis.
Right.
And his greased up jersey, and we were like, "How is Priest Holmes not in the Hall of Fame?" If
The best 3-year stretch of any running back, maybe ever.
Yeah, I think, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he'll get there. This is my personal opinion, just based on how,
it's measured. It's only Terrell Davis. It's his Super Bowls that got him in.
Yeah,
yeah. It's going to be a spot where it's going to be difficult for him to do it, just because it wasn't over the amount of length of time that he's probably going to need to get in. But I don't think anybody could argue that he probably deserves to be in based on his production and everything else.
I guess 2002 coming in. Did you guys know he was going to be that good? Like, did he do just incredible things in practice, or
I think
was it more just game time turning it on?
Yeah, I think – I mean, they were – really high on him after the 2001 season. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, they'd gotten him from Baltimore. And 2002, I think the thing with Priest is he could just do everything.
Yeah.
That was the thing within our offense. You knew we can throw him the ball out of the backfield because there's a lot of running backs that are really great at running the football, but they're not that they don't have great hands.
Yeah.
And you can't do the things you want to do with them. And I think the thing with Priest was he was so good on checkdowns. You know, if everything was covered, Trent could check it down to him and he could make guys miss and go for 30 yards. Or because our offensive line was so athletic, the screen game was so big with him. And to this day, like I played with some really good running backs, but you know, he also was probably doesn't get enough credit for being as patient of a runner as he was.
Just when he would like follow Willie.
Yeah, we'd run the sweeps and stuff with him, right? Gosh, and
like a 12-second play. Yeah,
and
you
just watch our offensive line get out there and he would just wait and you're like thinking there's no way he's just gonna have to run out of bounds. And all of a sudden the hole opens up and he sticks his foot in the ground and next thing you know, he's 10 yards into the end zone. Like he was such a patient runner. And just overall could do everything. I think that's why he was so dynamic.
And speaking of that offense, you guys had Al Saunders as your offensive coordinator. Who do you think is like a better offensive mind? Do you see like some similarities between Al Saunders and Andy Reid?
I think the thing with Andy is much more open to ideas.
Okay.
In terms of evolving with the game on things. Al was very rigid in terms of this is how we're going to run our offense.
As long as you had like six pre-snap motions.
So we had all the shifts and movement and stuff. And it got to the point where we'd call it and half the time we wouldn't even line up where we were supposed to initially because we knew we were moving.
Those had to be such long play calls.
Yeah. I mean, every NFL play call is long, but you just knew, you know, we got to the point, I think, like especially in 2003, 2004, 2005, where – you know, we'd call certain shifts and stuff, and a lot of times we wouldn't do the exact certain plays we had to on the shift before the motion, but just the overall shifts to start, we would just kind of line up because it became a point where he gave us the freedom to do that, though, because we knew the offense. You know, we could do it. I think Andy's more creative overall. I do. I think, you know, we were rigid and structured, but we didn't put in a lot of new plays on a week-to-week basis, you know, of different things. We stayed within our concepts. Mm-hmm. I think we knew within our concepts that our athletes were better than the other team's athletes, and we knew we could get it done with it. I mean, you see a lot more now of guys, especially with Andy, of checking out of plays and checking in. We never did any of that. We ran what was pretty much called. Like, Trent very rarely had the freedom to audible, or let alone would audible to anything.
That's we just knew our 32, right? In 2002?
Yeah, I think it was Al's way of this is what our concept is, and we feel it's going to be better than what yours is. And we have, you know, if we're running a four vertical route and all our guys are covered, we know we got Priest Holmes to check the ball down to. There's always an outlet, so it didn't really matter.
So being like rigid, I always wonder this because I didn't play football.
I did.
I'm a huge nerd. But when you say like I've got. Certain things are in the game plan. Like, what does that mean? Are you like seriously being like, okay, we have a playbook of, 200 plays and against the Broncos, we like these, you know, 40 plays and that's all we're going to, you know, run those.
No, I think, or like you have all 200 available to you usually. I think what goes into the game planning piece, which is the fun part is when you come in and get it on Wednesday, you're looking at opponent's film. And the coaches have put the game plan together and are going, these are the top 15 to 20 plays in these situations. And this is why, because this is the defense's tendency in these situations on 3rd and 8 or 3rd and long or 3rd and 3 or 3rd and 4. We know we're going to get, you know, one of two coverages, or they've played, you know, 85% man or 75% man in these situations. And then the zone is only either cover 2 or cover 3. So, you know, you're deducting from that point, we're playing the odds in our favor based on the play calls. That's what I think a lot of people as you look at all this stuff. That's where the game planning piece comes into it. You're looking at tendencies and you're saying, okay, I'm helping out our quarterback or I'm helping everybody out knowing if you study it, okay, as a player too, because there's a lot of guys that don't. But if you study it, you know I'm getting man coverage in this situation based on the look I'm getting, or I'm getting zone, or whatever that may be. That's where all that comes into play. And so, you know, these are the top 15 or so plays. And then going into the game plan, you finalize that a little bit more, saying, okay, these are our top third and five passing plays, mm-hmm. or third and short, third and medium passing plays. So by the time you get in the huddle, based on the personnel group, if you know it's third and four, I know it's probably one of four plays already coming, okay. especially early in the game. Oh, that's I don't cool. really even need to hear Trent spit out the word. As soon as he starts it, I know what play we're at.
Yeah, because like of all these like mic'd up stuff since the Super Bowl and AFC Championship game and whatnot, like I'll see like receivers, especially receivers, like they're like casually listening to the play call. So that makes sense because, you know, maybe they can hear it and they're not casually listening. But it looks like
they probably
have an idea like, yeah. okay, I figured they
would
call this.
And as long as the play calls are, right, you've got protection, you got shifts and motions, formation, protection mm-hmm. in there. The offensive linemen only care about the protection, right, or if then the running play, listening. Then they're done listening. They don't care. They know in certain situations, okay, if it's a play action pass or whatever, we've got to be really firm up front here mm-hmm. in these situations. Or we know we got to give them time because the route concept's a little bit longer on these. But for the most part, you're only listening to the code words that pertain to you.
To you.
Huh. Yeah. Well, because then offensive linemen start to leave the huddle and you're like, I didn't even tell you the snap count.
Right.
You big, dumb, idiot. Like, get back in here.
That's right.
And that was the most frustrating part because you're like, all right, there's a protection. I'm done.
Oh, did you play quarterback?
Yeah, I played quarterback. High school quarterback. No big deal. Like, no big deal at all. I rarely bring that up on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So game plan's done. Game's over. You guys had a lot of exciting wins. 2003, like, not saying you're going out partying, but if the Chiefs are going out partying in Kansas City, like, where were you guys going in 2003? Power and Light doesn't exist.
P&L didn't exist.
Like, downtown's not what it is now.
No, downtown was, like, non-existent. Like, Crossroads, I mean, some guys still went to Westport, I think, at that point.
Okay.
Harpo's.
I was never a guy that went out. I mean, I've lived in the Overland Park area my entire time that I've lived here. So, you know, there was Raul's Velvet Room out there in OP for a while. It's just now where like one block south is. Like it was like one of the only club deals. Like, so guys would possibly go there. I've always been kind of a homebody and stuff. So most of the team gatherings or times where we were out as a team, it was usually just at somebody's house in a lot of ways.
Okay.
I'm sure there were guys that went out more
at
the time. I mean, I wasn't single at the time, so I wasn't, you know, I wasn't worried about any of that kind of stuff. So I was more of a homebody.
This
in regards to all that.
How much? What are we at time wise?
Like 35 minutes.
Okay. Quick question, because this just was in the news today. The new CBA. A lot of talk is about adding another game. Just from your perspective, like, can you imagine playing another game and then another round of playoffs? Like, after that?
Yeah, it's interesting to me. It's all about the dollars, right? You know, we talked about a little bit. I played in Canada. We played 18 regular season games in mm-hmm. Canada, and we only had two preseason games. So mm-hmm. basically, it's the same season that mm-hmm. they have currently now in the NFL. 16 games, four preseason games. Attitudes have changed on the preseason games, clearly over the last decade, in terms of coaches not playing their starters as much. It used to be you'd get a drive or two for your starters the first preseason game. You'd maybe play them a half, the second, the third. You may play them almost the entire game. And then the fourth, they may get a series or two just to keep them fresh and they were done. Now you're seeing the star players not even play.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the entire preseason.
Yeah.
My take on it is this. I don't like the deal as it's structured. And I haven't seen all the details, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But adding the 17th game, the big question comes up, well, how are you going to be paid, right? Are they going to be paid for that 17th game? The biggest misnomer I think that's out there is that people don't understand, the general public, that as an NFL player, you actually get paid over 17 weeks. So you get paid for your bye week. You're getting 17 checks already.
Mm-hmm.
What they're offering with the capped piece for your highest paid guys of $250,000 is mm-hmm. basically saying, we want to give you a reduced rate for the bye week. Mm-hmm. Okay, we still want to give you 17 checks.
But only $250,000.
But we'll give you less, right, for your bye week. You know, there's going to have to be some concessions made. I don't think it's that big of a deal to go to 17 games as long as they're going to eliminate one of the preseason games.
Mm-hmm. You're out of bye week, too.
Yeah, and I think the minute details of everything of, okay, well, there'll be more of an acclimation process in training camp and there'll be less physical practices and stuff. Well, adding that extra game, a full game, is going to, you know, wear and tear on guys anyway. In terms of the playoff format, I don't know. I kind of like the playoff format the way it is. I think you're going to, you know, we used to live in an era where we still do a little bit where you'd get some 9-7 teams in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think you're going to possibly get in some situations based on how the year goes. You might get a 7-9 team in the playoffs or an 8-8 team. Not that it hasn't happened before.
2002, you guys were 8-8 and finished fourth
yeah.
in the division.
Yeah. I mean, we had – and I remember going into the final week of the season that year too. Maybe it was, I think it was that year. We needed like four things to happen for us to possibly make it at 8-8, and like three of them did. Like we were close. Or
Almost like, what was that, the 2008 Chiefs?
Yeah, I was going to say that one year with Herm where he was like, we didn't back into the playoffs. Yeah, I'm like, you backed into the playoffs because five things had to happen for you, and it happened. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's all about the dollars and cents piece. It's about where the salary cap's going to go. It's about the percentage of the pie that's going to the players. Mm-hmm. As a former player now, you know, I look at what are they fighting for us as former players in terms of health care, things like that. I'm fortunate at 41 right now that, I mean, my body aches. I've got old athlete problems. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not as in bad a shape as some guys are.
Yeah.
Part of that's because I played receiver and I didn't, you know, get hit every single down out there.
Special teams.
Special teams, yeah. I mean, I got my neck shortened. I played in the age when they could still use the wedge and it was the big offensive lineman and you had a 40-yard head start and your job is to break the wedge between these two guys and you're like, okay, here it comes. And then coming to the sideline and going, am I still 6'3 or am I 5'10 right now? Because that's where I feel my neck is. It's going to be interesting. I was a part of the NFL Players Union. I'm a part of the former players, NFLPA former players union, as most of us are. Really, as collectively as a whole, the NFLPA is one of the weakest unions in all sports. Baseball is probably the number one in terms of the strongest. Mm-hmm. And until guys are ready to strike or say, we're not going to play under this, you know, there's a happy medium where everybody's going to be happy. But if they really want to stand up for some of the things they want, then they need to strike at some point. And that may not happen after this year, of course, because there's still one more year technically on the CBA. Mm-hmm. But they're going to have to solidarily get together and say, well, we're not doing this.
Mm-hmm. That's a sad note to end on.
Well, I was going to say, okay, then last question. Chris Jones, is he a Chief next year?
Ooh. This might be a sad note also. I don't think he is.
Like a franchise tag and trade
I think there's going to be a franchise tag and trade situation, and it's not because they don't want to keep him. I think you have to make decisions for the long term for your team. I think the Chiefs want him here. I think he wants to be here. I think everybody else obviously wants him here. Mm-hmm. I would love to have him
Danny
here.
I bought his jersey.
That was the curse, wasn't it? He's gone. It's sad. But I think everybody wants him here, but there's only so much money to go around, and you have to invest in certain areas.
Championship problems.
Yes, there are ways to make it work. There are. But I also think as you look at the long-term aspect, if you can franchise him and trade him for additional draft picks, you know, because at some point you're going to have guys like Chris Jones playing on their rookie contract for you at the level he was playing at.
I mean, he did solid this year.
Yes, and you can get other guys. You got to hit on them, right, in the draft.
Yeah.
But and maybe not at his level, but you've got to get guys that are playing on the rookie contracts that are playing at high levels to sustain this. Mm-hmm. And that's a difficulty of projecting, you know, talent and everything else. But I would love to have him back here. I think ultimately they're going to franchise him and trade him. Or the other option for him, if they franchise him, is for him to go ahead and sign the franchise tag right away and say, I'm going to bet on myself one more year.
Yeah.
And we're going to figure out what's going to happen with the CBA. And I know I'm getting long-winded here, but, you know, Patrick Mahomes can basically take a blank check and write for all we care. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Chiefs don't have to do anything with him yet. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't. And that's why I think Clark Hunt came out and said, you know, in the next 12 months, in the next year, because they're going to navigate, I think, and see where this is going to go with the CBA. If this gets done, they know where it's going to go. But if it doesn't get done right away, they don't have to be in a hurry with him. Now, do you keep him happy, though, right, by not doing a long-term deal or the extension? But there's ways that there's ways to be creative about it and different things because, you know, they're going to pick up his fifth-year option. Now, after his kneecap was sideways, he may look at it, right, and say, I want my money. Let's do it now. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that's still to come out yet on all this stuff.
Almost lawn.
Yeah.
I'll do whatever.
I'm sure people will line up and volunteer to do whatever for either of those guys at this point, right? Yeah. To keep them here. But it's all going to depend on what their decision is, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also look at it, and I know Chris Jones has said he wants to be here in his regard, but you also just want a ring, and you're a young guy that want a ring. And most guys want to get paid no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And – you know, if you've already won the ring and say, now I can go cash in somewhere.
Generational wealth
can happen. Mm-hmm. And you can't fault a guy for that.
No, definitely not. And we did get to Patrick Mahomes. So that's ending on a good note, right?
Yeah, there we go. That's right.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for your time.
Absolutely.
All right. So thanks again to Mark for joining us. Great stories. My favorite was the Willie Rofe story. That they just didn't let Willie walk out to coin toss because he walked too much like an old man.
That was so good. He was a captain. But he wasn't allowed. He's a professional athlete and a captain, but he wasn't allowed to walk out onto the field.
They didn't want the other team to see him walk out there.
Yeah. I forgot how insane his rookie season was.
Mm-hmm.
8 touchdowns. Like, we thought Mecole Hardman had a great rookie season, and he had 6 maybe.
Yeah,
6 touchdowns, including a kickoff return.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Richter went off that rookie year. So yeah, that was awesome. A fun interview.
Yeah, so thanks again to Mark for joining us. Tons of fun. All right, let's jump into what we tried this week. Dan, what did you try this week?
So I said I was going to start this like post-football.
Okay.
Post-parade season.
Playoffs, Super Bowl.
That, it just happened to go... like
as long as possible. Yeah,
the Chiefs aren't good for like trying to cure my habit of procrastination.
Yeah.
But you know, football season is bulking season. It's mm-hmm. winter.
Starts in October. It starts in the fall.
Yeah.
Chilly season. Start bulking.
You're drinking a lot. Mm-hmm. You're footballing hard mm-hmm. Saturdays, afternoons. So I said I would start this after because I gained a little weight.
Yeah.
Gained a little weight.
Wasn't going to say anything.
And I started Orange Theory. I joined the cult last week.
Yeah. I mean, not as big a cult as Health House.
They sell you hard, too. Like, I took my one free class earlier, like last December with Megan, and I get calls like every single day. Like, hey, when are you signing up? Hey, mm-hmm. it's the coach.
Yeah.
But I feel like now I'm part of the cult, and
wait till I'm
an instructor.
Yeah, wait till you put it on pause. Then they'll really start coming at you come back.
Yeah.
They'll start hounding you.
So I need...
but you're an instructor now.
Yeah. I need a tutorial quickly on any Orange Theory lingo you've got.
Yeah, since I did it before. I mean, splats are big. Mm. It's all about getting that splat point.
Splatted hard on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Went, splatted all over.
Yeah, how many?
30.
30? 30. I don't think that's healthy.
Yeah,
30. Your heart rate's just up the whole entire time.
It was an endurance day, so if you know anything about it, you know, endurance days, you earn a little bit more. But yeah, I was cranking splats, and I splatted 30 times.
That's awesome.
On Saturday.
You know, you got your push pace.
Okay.
Your
push all out.
All out, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really the terms.
Yeah. Well, I'm addicted now, and I'm basically an instructor. And if you see me, of course, me, like, I did the cheapest way possible.
Oh, yeah.
So they were offering a Valentine's Day special. So if you signed up before the 17th, that's not Valentine's Day, but that was the end of the weekend. If you signed up before the 17th, you got a free heart monitor.
Oh, right? Nice.
But it was only the chest heart monitor.
That sucks.
Which is like the cheap one. The cheap one is $80, mm-hmm. by the way. But in order to get that chest monitor, you had to get the highest membership. What is that, Premier or Elite? You had to get the $159 membership. So I'm sitting there doing the math. Oh, and if you want to downgrade your membership, you have to give 30-day notice to downgrade your membership. So I'm like, okay. And then the regular membership that I downgraded to was $89. So I'm like, all right, so I sign up for the full membership.
Immediately downgrade.
Get the free heart monitor. Literally turned that paperwork in, got the paperwork for the downgrade, downgraded, and I saved like $15 on my heart monitor. So I'm signed up for Orange Theory. If you see me, just, you know, give me the secret Orange Theory handshake. All of you guys know what that is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we'll cult together. We'll splat together. That's what I tried this
week. All right. I tried Boulevard Beer Hall Bingo. Yeah, that's a good time. That's a nice way to spend your Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I was splatting.
Well, I was bingoing. also drinking Tank 7 Beer Moses that they have on special.
I feel like that's like putting caviar on a Hostess or something like
that. Oh, yeah. Or, wait, caviar on a Hostess?
I don't know. I was thinking maybe caviar on a Twinkie.
I think you're thinking like putting Coke with a really good whiskey. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah, that works. Yeah. That's a better analogy.
Okay. Well, it was really good, though. $6, and they give you the full amount of Tank 7 that they normally pour in a glass.
Why wouldn't you top just it drink off Tank 7?
Well, because it was 11 or like 10:45 in the morning.
Okay. Yeah,
so I felt better about drinking beer at 10:45 in the morning I put a little OJ.
You can have a Tank 7 if you put a little OJ splash of it.
But then I don't feel bad about it.
I don't see. That's completely normal logic.
Complete breakfast. Balanced breakfast. Yeah. So that was an awesome part of it. Uh-huh. They do have food going as well. And then there's just hundreds of people playing bingo. And each game.
Hundreds?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that whole beer hall is packed. Sheesh. We got there at 10:45, got a seat on the patio. Luckily, Sunday was a beautiful day out. It worked out really well. But, yeah, you got to get there early, like 10:30, 10:15 probably.
Sheesh.
To get a decent spot. But okay. Really fun. They play four games of bingo, all sorts of different blackout X's. You make a seven for the Tank 7 round.
Like that.
All sorts of games. Each game has like four or five winners with like cool Boulevard prizes. Mm-hmm. Really fun thing to do. I went with my girlfriend and her sister and fiance who were in town from Colorado. Showed it off. And was
there
like,
you go. Yes. It's a great place to take out-of-towners.
Yes.
Speaking of bingo, we've got a big bingo announcement coming next week.
Next week.
If there was ever such a thing as a big bingo announcement,
stay tuned. It's coming next week. Stay tuned for that. So that's what we tried this week. Next, we got a Midwest Mad again. Is this back-to-back Midwest Mads?
Midwest Mad.
Yes.
This is...
I'm upset because I love this place.
This is the internet at its finest. Mm-hmm. So, Reddit, yeah. Okay, so about a week ago, 7 days ago, there's a post on a very popular subreddit. The subreddit is called Kitchen Confidential, and it's basically a subreddit where people in the service industry go and it become part of that community. It's a community of people in the service industry. So someone posted 7 days ago, the title of the post is "Ugh." Walked out of a new job after 45 minutes. She says in the post, went in to start my first day at a new job. First, I got told to restock one of the filthiest work areas I've ever seen. I cleaned and sanitized the shit out of it. As they told me to portion chicken tenders, then they told me to portion chicken tenders, and they gave me a stack of used portion bags that had been sitting out at room temp for at least a day. I asked them, you want me to reuse portion bags? I think portion bags are just like plastic bags that you put in. Like, so when someone orders a thing of chicken fingers, you just have it ready and just dump them in the bar. She says, you want me to reuse portion bags for raw chicken? Question mark. The owner responded, we only reuse them once or twice.
Yeah.
I walked out immediately.
And how long does Salmonella live?
Yeah. So then she says, I walked out immediately after that, sent the owner a text explaining why. This is her... saying this 7 days ago, right? This is her. Mm-hmm. She eventually gets talked into it because people are concerned, revealing the name of the restaurant.
Yes, Kansas City's own.
The Quaff downtown.
Quaff. I like the Quaff too.
The Quaff downtown. So she reveals that. It blows up on Kansas City's Reddit because it gets posted on KC Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
So the Quaff owner sees this.
Yes.
The Quaff responds.
Yes.
This is good old fashioned
internet
beef. Facebook. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
His name on Facebook, he says his name is Anthony Quaff. I don't think that's his name, but I assume it's Anthony who works at the Quaff. Okay, everyone, this is what's going on. We appreciate that everyone has given us the benefit of the doubt.
I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't either. We had a girl start Monday. She got fired 15 minutes into her shift. She went crazy, threatening she was going to kill everyone and had to be escorted out by the police at 10 a.m.
There's two sides to every story.
At 10 a.m., she decided to write a terrible review and submitted it online. Our kitchen is spotless.
Mm.
Feel free to come by anytime to check it out. Rather than listening to a mentally ill lady who needs some serious psychiatric help.
Mm.
Feel free to spread the word, since a ton of people, most of who have never been to the Quaff, are hellbent on destroying 73 years of tradition and hard work.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you. So this is what he posts. This gets this is on Facebook. This gets posted onto Reddit.
Onto that same thread. Or, okay.
On the Kansas City Reddit. Yeah. Then the internet does its thing, mm-hmm. which I love when the internet does its thing.
I do too.
First, the poster of the original text, the woman who quit after 45 minutes, she's got receipts.
Oh,
she posts her texts with the owner. The texts start, cool, see you at 8 a.m. Call me when you get here because our doors are locked until 10. All right, we'll do. 8 a.m. I'm here. So 8 a.m. So she gets let in. At 9:04, she sends a text. So I don't think it's going to work out. You guys are nice, but I don't think it's a good fit for me. Response from the owner. Okay, thanks. Response from the girl. It's nothing personal. It's just reusing portion bags is a big no for me, especially for chicken. Food safety and cleanliness are big deals. So she posts the receipts. Then the internet says, hey, this guy said he called the police at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Boom. Internet's on KC Police checking the blotter. No report of the police responding to any sort of call at 10 a.m. or anything that day to a girl who threatened to kill the entire staff of a restaurant.
Yes.
No, nothing like that in the police blotter. Also, the guy who posted his original, the owner of the Quaff, he went back, edited his post, and now the post on Facebook
doesn't the
mention the police. The only verifiable fact from a third party is the fact that he said he called the police on them.
Yeah.
He realized people could check that as they were doing on Reddit, and he deleted that portion of it. So it doesn't look good. It seems that the girl who originally posted the story and quit is actually telling the truth.
Yeah.
Quaff, probably not. And that's the way it looks online. And I love the internet and Casey Reddit.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the only argument I could make in favor of the Quaff is maybe she photoshopped the text messages.
You can do that.
You can do that. But there was no. But him removing the police part of the story makes him
changing a story.
Very guilty.
There's no evidence of police.
And she has never changed her story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even the original post.
Damn, Quaff's delicious.
Yeah. Even the original post, she, you know, the time frame lines up with her texts. Mm-hmm. She said in the original post that she sent the owner a text explaining why she quit. So her story hasn't changed.
His has.
She didn't even post the name of the restaurant at first.
Yeah.
Until being said, you know, she should probably report them to the health department. So Kansas City Reddit.
Undefeated.
The internet. You can't fool the internet. There's too many people out there.
There are.
That only want to prove you wrong.
Yep. All right. So that is Midwest Mad. Now the return of a segment. Say something nice about St. Louis. It's your turn.
Yeah. I was in St. Louis for a wedding last weekend.
Say something nice.
Now I've come here to say something nice
about
St. Louis.
This is because I will be traveling to St. Louis because I'm dating a girl from St. Louis. So I'm going to say something nice every time I go there.
Okay.
But now you went there, so you got to say something nice.
I noticed that they don't have a skyline, so all the pictures aren't the same of downtown St. Louis.
Okay.
So, like, Kansas City, like, if you search, like, Kansas City skyline, you get the same picture over and over again. Mm-hmm. But because St. Louis doesn't have a skyline, you don't get the same picture over and over again. So,
you get the arch. Nice.
Yeah, the arch. That's about it. Also, the band who played my wedding, the band who's been on this show, the Wonder Fuzz, played this wedding. So, our friends who got married, they saw Wonder Fuzz at our wedding. They said, we got to have them. So here's me saying something nice about St. Louis. It's close enough to Kansas City that the Wonder Fuzz can drive there for a wedding. So it's a big plus for St. Louis.
Yeah.
That is 3.5
really
hours
big
from
of you
KC.
To say something nice like that. I'm going to say something nice too, though. I am declaring this a pro Battle Hawks podcast.
Okay.
The St. Louis Battle Hawks are my team.
Did you watch
them? I did watch them.
Okay.
Yeah. They're my team. So this is a pro Battle Hawks podcast.
All right.
All right.
All right.
So that's something nice about St. Louis. Now it's mixed plate time.
Okay.
We talked to Mark Bo Richter.
Mm-hmm.
Talked a lot about those 02, 03, 04 Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're coming down to our mixed plate of our favorite players from the Mark Bo Richter era.
Mm-hmm.
So they shared the field with Bo Richter from 02 to 05 or 06.
Mm-hmm.
05, I think.
05, yeah.
Yes. So because it's who shared the field with Mark Bo Richter, that's why he's not on our list. Obviously, he would be on the mixed plate, but we're doing it who shared the field with Mark Bo Richter.
This is going to be hot because these were some of my favorite teams. So 02 to 06 was like I was, you know, 13 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was when I started to love the Chiefs even more than, you know, the Derek Thomas era and that whole era I knew, but not as well as this team. Like,
yep.
Like we said earlier, the Madden.
This is my childhood team.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. Who starts?
What did we do last week? We did fruit. Or vegetables, I think I went first.
Yeah, you went first. All right,
damn it.
I'm going first. Easy pick. Number one, send it, Priest Holmes.
Yeah, that's really good.
Priest Holmes was
the best three-year stretch in NFL history.
For a running back. Yep. Mm-hmm. He should be in Canton. He should be in the Hall of Fame. He's an absolute warrior. I love Priest Holmes.
He set the record for rushing touchdowns in back-to-back years.
Mm-hmm.
The best in NFL history in back-to-back years.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Insane how good that was. All right. So my meat number one on this mixed plate, I think this guy's got to be second, Tony Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, in his prime right there, especially in that 03 offense, you know, had 1,000 yards receiving, was outstanding again that year, dunking the ball on the goalpost.
The coolest thing ever.
Iconic. Tony G.
All right. My meat number two for the 02 to 05 Chiefs, Jared Allen.
Ah, I had him. Yeah.
Jared Allen with his sack celebration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than like the three DUIs that he got while in KC, his sack celebration was awesome. He had a heinous looking restaurant downtown as well.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta respect Jared Allen. He was who he was.
Yeah.
Didn't try to be anyone else.
Wasn't hiding it. That was a really good one. All right. My meat number two, and let's talk meat. Willie Rofe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the look.
Yeah.
Just everything about him. He was incredible.
Look at the size of that lad.
Yeah. Anytime we ran a sweep to the left and he got out there pulling, just boom, 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 boom. Incredible to watch. Just theater.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. My side number one, mixed plate. God. All right. Oh, God.
Come on, let's go.
All right, I'll say Will Shields. Will Shields.
Okay.
The other anchor of that offensive line. That offensive line was the greatest unit that ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's your Twitter banner picture, the picture of them. And like, I need to go back. I wish I had brought these up. Just look up Will Shields' stats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he started, like, every game for, I don't know, 14 seasons in a row. Yeah. That's probably not that long. I think he had like three holding penalties in his entire career.
One false start. Yeah.
He was just insane. He was so good.
Yeah.
So I loved Will Shields.
Yeah. All right. I'm going, God, it's hard to not go offense.
I know.
It's really hard not to go offense. So I'm gonna go with Trent Green.
Yep. He's on mine.
He was incredible. I think he threw for 4,000 yards in like four straight seasons.
Yeah, it was like him, Peyton Manning, and Dante Culpepper.
How good he was.
We're just putting up yards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's it. Trent Green. Yeah, that's my side number one.
All right. So my side number two, wrapping up my team, my all 2002 to 2005 team. I'm going Eddie Kinnison.
Damn, that's good.
Dude was a producer, and his catch against Green Bay in overtime to beat the Packers was, I remember exactly where I was at that moment, and it was a play that I'll never forget. And he just put up numbers, and he produced, and loved Eddie Kinnison.
Yeah, loved Eddie Kinnison. All right, I feel like we need one defensive player.
I had Jared Allen.
Oh, you had Jared Allen. Okay, I need a defensive player on my mixed plate. So my meat number two. Going with Jerome Woods.
Oh, nice.
I love Jerome Woods.
Number 21 was just, I mean, sexy. And
he was just scary, and you just thought, you know, if I ever wanted to, like, jack someone up, like, hit him hard, I was like, I'm going to Jerome Woods this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was an enforcer in my head, at least.
Yeah.
So I'm going Jerome Woods.
Okay.
Rounding out the mixed play.
All right. Who I left off, like, Kavika Mitchell.
Yeah, had him.
I always played with him as in Madden.
Yeah.
Like, when I played on defense or on Madden.
Kendrell Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would play with Kavika Mitchell or Scott Fujita.
Yeah.
When I was controlling the defense player.
Like, yeah, that's why I don't get how the defense wasn't good. Kendrell Bell, Scott Fujita.
Greg Wesley.
Greg Wesley. Eric Warfield.
Vonnie Holiday.
Benny Sapp.
Eric Hicks.
Yeah. How are we not good?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't get it.
Dante Hall was on those teams.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, Dante.
That's a big miss.
X Factor.
Yeah.
He was
Rich. I had Tony Richardson.
Yeah,
Rich. He was awesome.
If you didn't, like, at some point, if you didn't recreate the Dante Hall kick return against Denver, mm-hmm. where he turns all the way around,
yeah.
Everyone recreated that at some point in their backyard.
Yeah. And then Larry Johnson, 2005, but he's
kind of cool.
I know. Close. I don't know if I should delete that Instagram photo I have with him or not, but. He's a wild Twitter.
Dude, there was a game when against Atlanta, Priest Holmes had 4 rushing touchdowns and Larry Johnson had 4 rushing touchdowns.
I thought it was Mike Cloud.
No. Great name, though.
I think it was Mike
Cloud. No, it was Larry Johnson.
We'll fact check that.
I'm positive. It was I'm positive.
Okay, we'll see. Well, when it comes out on the other side, because that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for sticking with us. We went long in the interview, but it was Mark freaking Bowrichter.
Yeah,
I got to talk 2003 Chiefs. So that was awesome. So thanks again to Mark for coming on. Who do we have up next?
Andy Rieger.
So we're going down to Rieger's. I can't wait to try.
We're going
that
down
out.
To Rieger tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so pumped for that.
Or today.
Today. So I'm really excited for that. That's going to be a great episode. Again, thanks to PlexPod Westport Commons for hosting our new studio. We appreciate that. That's all we have this week. Be sure to like and subscribe to us on social media at State Your Line. Give us 5 stars. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts as well. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you around Kansas City.